Hi and welcome to Aussie Jurok's podcast. And today we're very fortunate to have a repeat performance from the illustrious Stuart Ross from Gardner & Harris, a great lawyer who specializes in everything to do with wills and estates, real estate, residential construction. He's really an expert in complex subdivision law. And so very happy to have him here. We want to talk about title insurance, flipping taxes, my God, GST, and so on. So welcome, Stuart.
Thank you, Ozzy. Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
So let's talk, maybe start out with this very daunting thing. Do we need title insurance?
Okay, well, the first thing I think that we need to answer there is, what is title insurance? So in BC, title insurance is a product that protects property owners and lenders from financial loss due to hidden defects on title, fraud like identity theft when you sell your home, zoning issues, survey problems such as encroachments from another property, or errors in public records that may affect legal ownership of property if they existed prior to the property being purchased.
So do you think that property owners should obtain that insurance? Should they get it?
Well, for many owners, the question itself is somewhat rhetorical. Virtually all lenders will require title insurance for fee simple detached home purchases. Some lenders will also require title insurance for strata purchases. There's some that require it for strata purchases and some that do not. So buyers and borrowers often don't really have a choice on whether or not they obtain title insurance. With that being said, property owners with mortgage-free properties are still able to purchase what you would call an owner's policy. Now, this policy, it actually has to be purchased through a law firm. You can't call Stuart Title, for example, and say, I want to place a title insurance policy. It has to be done through a law firm. My advice to buyers, even if they're not being required to purchase a title insurance policy, is that they do so. Unlike other insurance products, title insurance is only a one-time payment and it's relatively inexpensive. Normally, it's only a few hundred dollars to obtain an owner's policy, an owner's title insurance policy.
And we have so many times we see so much fraud going on in Ontario where people sort of pretend they own the place, and there's a lot of areas where title insurance, they wish they would have had it.
Absolutely. And these scams are only getting more and more sophisticated all the time. So having something in place to protect against fraud or any other defects or something like that, it's only becoming more common. So having something in place and somebody that you can turn to, and they cover your legal fees too, right? So if there's problems, you know, like you don't have to pay for a lawyer to investigate the fraud or to try and get a transaction unwound. The title insurance company will pick that up for you. So when compared to the value of the property and the protection title insurance can offer, it would seem like a really prudent purchase in my opinion. So yeah. I usually advise people to get title insurance, even if they're not required to.
Yeah, makes sense, you know, because as you said, it's just a few hundred dollars. So let me change gears. One of the things right now is we have the mom and pop mortgage. You know, either they'll outright give you the money for the kids because prices are up and we want to help, or we guarantee the mortgage. And should you do that? If you're a father and a mother and you want to help your child, should you guarantee it, the mortgage to your child?
Well, I never had any personal experience with that. Unfortunately, my parents never guaranteed anything for me, but
I didn't either.
But parents will often be willing to go to great lengths to assist their children in getting a leg up in life. So it's not really a question of whether parents should or shouldn't guarantee a mortgage for their children. It's more about the parents being fully aware of what that guarantee actually means. So when you guarantee a mortgage or any loan for that matter, the guarantor, the parents in this case, need to understand that they're fully responsible for the entirety of the loan.
The entirety, so, not just their half or whatever they think, for the whole loan.
That's right. So, for example, if you were to guarantee a $500,000 mortgage and the borrower misses a payment, the lender would be within their rights to seek repayment from the guarantor for the entire amount without even looking to the borrower. Perhaps the guarantor has a lot of liquid assets or something, and the lender thinks that, this is going to be a lot easier for me just to make a demand to the guarantor. The borrower, the child, was a day later, a dollar short. So they just go to the guarantor and say, you know what? You owe me. You have to pay me back this entire loan. I'm not even going to look at foreclosing the property. It's easier for me just to demand it from you directly. And the guarantor needs to basically understand that if they're in for a penny, they're in for a pound. So that they're on for the whole, for the whole,
Oh man,
for
that
the
I'm sure is a big surprise. Make sure that you don't, as a guarantor, that you're not being surprised, because I might want to help, but I should protect myself. So what can somebody do to protect themselves when they guarantee a mortgage? Any mortgage, could be your kids or anybody else for that matter.
Well, the mortgage guarantee, you have to understand, is an agreement between the guarantor and the lender. So the parents are the guarantors in our example here, and the lender being the bank. It's not an agreement between the purchaser and the guarantor. So what guarantors might want to consider, for example, if you're lending your kids money or guaranteeing a loan for them with the bank, you could enter into a separate, what you would call an indemnity agreement with the borrower. And this would clearly set out that if you default on the mortgage, the bank can come after me, but you have to pay me back or something to that effect, or that you have to transfer title of the, if I pay out of my pocket to pay off the bank, I get your property, or I get to put a mortgage on your property or something like that. So I have an agreement with the other co-borrower or buyer to say that if the bank comes after me, you have to cover me because this is really your loan, not my loan.
That is such an important point. I want to stay on it for a minute, because when you consider that we now have an astounding number of people getting a divorce, for instance, the kids get married, everybody is happy, and then, oh, well, we want to buy a house, Dad. Can you give us some money? And before you know it, you're guaranteed a mortgage, and then they get divorced. Now what? You have all sorts of legal issues, and the upshot is you're on the hook. So better to say, look, kids, we may do that. But here's the thing: you and I, hand in hand, go see the law firm of Garton and Harris, and they sit down and tell us how we all get our rights protected.
That's right. And if you're lending to a couple as well, a child and their spouse or fiance or whatever the case might be, it can add an extra layer of complexity as well, because then there's always the question of if you're lending or gifting money for the purchase, are you gifting it to both of them or just your child and things like that. So you have to kind of factor that in too about who you're actually giving the money to, because most parents have that sense that they're lending the money to their child and not their child's fiance or future ex-fiance, whatever the case might be.
And the thing is, everything looks rosy, everything on the day it's good, it's wonderful. But unfortunately, I mean, I'm one of the few people that are married a very long time, and liking it, right? But unfortunately, a lot of times, now it's easy to get out. It's easy to say, I'm not going to fight this through. I'm not, anyways. And the point is, that's not what the parent or whoever was guaranteeing the mortgage was bargaining for. Look, one of the big things I'm getting right now is, my little mortgage company, my real estate company that I owned with Ralph Case, we sold some units in a building in Surrey, and that was sold in 2021, and so it was a pre-sale deal and it just closed, and so I and from buyers on that deal, but also, I hear this story all the time. The BC government brought in a flipping tax, and that came due January 1, 2025, and it says right in the tax that for a period of 730 days, I'm liable to pay a tax. Oops, are you still there?
I'm there. I got you.
Okay. So, how does that work? Am I liable to pay a profit if I sell profit tax?
That's right. In BC, the BC anti-flipping tax is imposed under the legislation titled Residential Property Short-Term Holding Profit Tax Act. So quite a mouthful. This act took effect on January 1, 2025. So we're almost at the end of the first year here. And basically, what this property said, this legislation says, is that if you sell your property after January 1st, 2025, income earned on the sale of the property may be subject to the tax if the property was owned for less than 2 years. And for the first year, the tax rate is actually 20%. So it's 20% of the income earned from a property sold within the first 365 days. And then you get into a sliding scale after the first year down to, no additional tax if you've held it for 2 years. So this applies even if this was your principal residence as well. So a lot of people, think, like that if it's your principal residence, it's all tax-free and things like that. But this legislation has
Super.
changed that. So it's no longer entirely tax-free. You have to be there for at least 2 years for you to avoid the tax there.
What about the pre-sale?
It does apply. This also applies to pre-sales as well, but it depends on when you signed the contract. So if you signed a pre-sale, I mean, some of these projects take a long time to get underway. And you might not be actually moving into a property or having it ready to rent or something like that, for years after you've signed your contract. So in the pre-sale case, the 2 years starts running from the date on which you signed the contract.
That's
So if you
so
signed the contract.
important. That should alleviate, in many cases, the question, because people say, well, it started January 1, 2025. Well, yeah, but I signed a contract in 23 or 24. And as long as it's within 730 days of when I signed the assignment contract with the, I mean, the pre-sale contract with the developer, that's when it starts.
That's right. But I would say, because you touched on it there with the assignments, if you
Yeah.
assign it, it starts from the day that you take over that contract, not from when the original purchaser took over that contract. So if you pick up an assignment today and your 2 year period starts running today, not from when the original buyer signed the contract.
Well, that is such an important point. I mean, it's partly also the government is wondering why people are no longer going, or not certainly not lining up to buy pre-sales and getting new construction going. First of all, you treat it as some sort of a villain, as if you're an investor in real estate. It's okay to go into crypto and blow $1 trillion on a weekend, or okay to go in the stock market and invest in silver that goes up 60%. That's okay. But as a real estate investor, you're not only being punished going in, you're then being vilified on all fronts. And then when you finally do make a little money, they'll grab you 20% of it, because that's just BC. It is also the case in federal law that we also pay a flipping tax.
There is also a federal anti-flipping tax as well, so it becomes quite cumbersome. And speaking of it, and I think we may have talked about this very quickly at one of your REAG events, but I think I had a case study that I noted very quickly there. And this was with respect to the Liberal MP from Vancouver Granville, Talib Nur Mohammed. So,
Yeah.
if I may, that this was an MP that they've since 2005. They have sold 41 properties. 21 of them were sold after less than 1 year of ownership. And MP Nur Mohammed made $4.9 million in the process. They've been asked several times whether or not they were claiming a principal residence exemption on these properties that they were flipping. And they've refused to answer. So I guess. The moral of they've got all their money out now, so now they can attack the smaller investors.
Yeah, I mean it's really is it poetic justice or whatever that that we make these kind of news. But the thing is, it is very important that you have legal advice, both when you sign, when you get in, and also to understand what's available and what isn't. If you take the GST, for instance, we now have a GST rebate. The Prime Minister talks about it. First-time buyers, there's limits and all this. Clarify, please, who gets the GST? Is it a rebate? Is it free when they buy a new property?
Yeah, well, actually, what I should first say is that this GST rebate, it's actually not fully approved right now. As of today, so as of December 29th, 2025, if you go to the CRA website and look for the first-time home buyers GST rebate or information on it, it says status not available. So
But he's talking about it all the time.
well, and that very well might be the case, but the practical reality is that if there's anybody out there right now looking to file for some sort of a GST rebate or something, it's not available. This actually isn't something, to my understanding, that's actually been approved yet. CRA is still figuring out the form and function of all this kind of stuff and what the application process is going to look like and what they're going to require from buyers. So this isn't something that's actually ready to rock yet. It's something that is still in the works. I don't believe it's finalized yet. My understanding is that this will end up going through, especially with, you say, the all the advertising that they're doing, and of trying to push this along, saying that they're giving this rebate or whatever it's going to be. So I don't imagine this isn't going to go through, but as of right now, there's nothing finalized yet. So when I get questions about this, I kind of have to say, look, it's not, it looks like it's going to happen, but it's not firm yet.
But what exactly is it? It's a limit on the
Well,
house price and
okay, so what most people are aware of is that when you purchase a newly constructed home, there's 5% GST charged on the purchase price. So if you were to buy a $1 million home, there would be $50,000 GST attached to the purchase price. The GST rebate that we're talking about now is designed to refund that 5% GST to first-time home buyers when they purchase newly constructed property. There are a few requirements when somebody's looking to do this. The property must be under $1 million. After $1 million, again, there's a sliding scale. The buyer cannot have lived in a property that they have owned for the last 4 years. So I guess the whole first-time home buyer might be a little bit of a misnomer. Let's just say it's a buyer that hasn't owned anything that they've lived in for the last 4 years. And the buyer must be a Canadian citizen or permanent resident. So those are kind of the parameters of when somebody might be eligible for this.
So how does it work when it on closing? Do you pay it and get it back, or do you get it deducted right away? Or?
Precisely. Well, it's important to note that the GST rebate looks like it's going to be a little bit different than, say, for example, like the property transfer tax. Many people are aware, especially people that are getting involved in real estate, is that when somebody purchases their first property, when there's a first-time home buyer, that they may be ex exempted from the provincial property transfer tax. Now, the provincial property transfer tax exemption is claimed at the time of closing. So when you're in your lawyer's office and you're signing your closing documents, you'll be asked, are you a first-time home buyer? If the property qualifies, if the value is low enough, you will be asked, are you a first-time home buyer? And if you are, when you sign your property transfer tax return, you claim your exemption, and that means that you don't have to pay the property transfer tax at the time you complete the property. Now, the GST rebate is being set up a little bit differently from what I can tell. This is being set up as a quote rebate and not an exemption. So what first-time home buyers are going to have to do is they're going to have to bring that money in at the time of closing and then apply to CRA to get the money back later. So I've had a lot of first-time buyers saying, and again, for saying, look, this isn't actually set up yet. But even if this, when this gets set up, or people with pre-sales that they're purchasing and things like that that aren't set to close for a couple years, that look, you're going to have to plan on bringing in the GST at the time you complete and applying for it later. So you need to make sure that you have enough funds on hand to be able to cover that and then get it back. Because there's a lot of people that seem as though that they're not really counting on having to bring that money into the lawyer's office at the time they're completing. They think it's going to work like the property transfer tax return, where they just sign the form and they don't actually have to pay it. That's not the case. You have to pay it and apply to get it back later.
Like I said, that's why you need a lawyer, you know. I mean, it's the devil is in the details, and in these tax years that we're in right now, the tax governments tax us to heck kind of governments, you need a lawyer more than ever. And that gets me to our final point is that, you know, when people get ready to buy something, what are some of the frequent missteps that they do or that they could better do in order to get the property?
Well, I think this would probably be a good time of year to touch on this at Christmas and New Year's and things like that. There seem to be a special set of problems. And the big one that I notice is that people are always saying that they're going to be out of town at the time their property completes. They'll have a closing scheduled for, say, December 29th or something like that. And they'll say, well, we're going to be in Hawaii at the time the property completes. Is that going to be a problem if we're out of town? And I always kind of have to say, well, it depends. There's a few things. It might be a problem. Now, what I often hear when I tell people that it might be an issue if you're going to be out of town during the closing is that they say, oh, I'll just sign electronically. I will use DocuSign or something like that. And people often get confused because they've signed their listing agreements remotely with their agent. They've signed their contract of purchase and sale remotely with DocuSign. And they've signed their mortgage application remotely or electronically with DocuSign. And they think they can sign the closing documents remotely as well. But that's not the case. The closing documents normally need to be signed in person with the lawyer as a witness. So I find that there can be a lot of surprise when I say, that's great that you signed all the other real estate documents with DocuSign or some other electronic means. But for the closing documents, you need to come into my office. And obviously, if somebody's planning on being out of town, that can be kind of an unwelcome surprise.
So what can people do to work around the problem?
Well, first and foremost, you'd probably want to just try and be in town for your closing. These are large transactions that people are doing. It's usually often the biggest transactions people are doing in their lifetime, or even if they're investors, you're still dealing with half million, multi-million dollar transactions. So, be here to attend to your investment or your home or whatever the case might be. Hawaii will still be there in a couple weeks. Other than that, I usually advise people, anybody that has an interest in real estate, is to have somebody appointed as a power of attorney. So if I was going to Hawaii this week and I had a condo selling, an investment condo, I can say, Ozzy, you're my power of attorney. You're going to be in town. Can you pop into my office and sign these papers on my behalf? And if I have a power of attorney given to you, that gets registered with the land title office, and then you can sign on my behalf for that closing. Even if you're not planning on being out of town, the little plug that I'll give is if you have an interest in real estate, if you're an investor, if you have own a home with your spouse or something, you really should have a power of attorney in place anyways, even if you're not planning on buying and selling or going out of town. If you become sick or incapacitated or something like that, someone to be able to sign mortgage renewal documents for you and pay property taxes on your behalf and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good estate planning tool, but especially if you own real estate, have somebody with power of attorney for you that you can get them to sign stuff for you if needed.
So much good advice. Thank you so much, Stuart, to lift the fog in so many different areas for me. The last time we talked, you offered our listeners a, I don't know whether I can rope you into this again, but that they could maybe ask you a not too long question without charge. Do you still offer that?
Unlike a lot of other lawyers, I am still kind of old school. I offer free consultations and things like that. There's no obligation. People
Minimal,
can.
minimal questions. We don't have, don't want to bring a huge inheritance legal battle. No, we're talking about a very quick question and hopefully within mind. Now, what for all of us that are listening this on a podcast, you can call Gardner and Harris. It has its own website. You can go see it and see Stuart there. But the call number is 604-468-8900 or 604-468-8900. I want to thank you so much for taking the time off just before we're going into a new year, hopefully a better real estate year. And absolutely have a, we say in Europe, we say have a good slide into the new year. All the best to you.
Okay, thanks, Ozzy. Thanks again for having me on. I'll see you in 2026.